This is the December 12 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Jim McCormick. He's at agmarket.net out of Barrington, Illinois. Chuck Shelby joins us from riskmanagementcommodities.com out of Lafayette, Indiana. That's rmccommodities.com. And Mike Zuzlow joins us as well from globalcomresearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world online on demand. Anytime you'd like to listen to us at willag.org, willag.org. If you'd like to join the Farm Doc team and myself this week, we'll be on the road. You can still find information up on our website at willag.org for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Walk-ins are welcome, but I will say this. If you walk in, you're going to scan a QR code and have to fill everything out on your phone. Probably easier if you want to come to Mount Vernon or East Peoria or DeKalb, just to go ahead and do that ahead of time. We'll see that registration before you get to us, and we'll know that you're coming. So join us on any of those dates starting Monday in Mount Vernon at the Doubletree. We'll be at the casino, the hotel there in East Peoria, Tuesday, and then we'll be at Barsema. That's on the Northern Illinois University campus in DeKalb on Wednesday. Now, let's get a list of items that we should talk about this week with our panelists. I think, Chuck Shelby, I'll start with you today. What's on your list?
We had a positive report this week for corn. I'm wondering, as we move into the January report, if we'll get another positive surprise with a little bit of a yield reduction.
Anything from you, Mike Zuzlow?
Hey, the big thing for me is where do we go after the WASDE numbers in terms of the Chinese economy and whether we can get out of the weather and supply Fed rallies and get some demand mindset back in these markets. We've got the demand. We just don't have the mindset.
And finally, Jim McCormick from agmarket.net.
I'm going to dovetail with the other two, Todd, but I think, the real question we have, or for me, I have is the demand. Is it all front loaded? And are we starting to see maybe the cracks in that with the weak export sales we had this week? And are we going to be disappointed as we move into 2025? Does this optimistic viewpoint of sales and exports dry up due to the potential trade wars out there?
Well, let's start there. Do you suppose that really we are front-loaded, or is this just holiday-type trade and we've begun actually in the loadouts to slow down as well for the same reason?
That's a million-dollar question, Todd. I mean, I think you could probably ask 10 different traders. You're going to get 10 different opinions. There's no doubt about it. There's a lot of people believe the government did the right thing by raising exports 150 million. The sales pace is definitely way ahead of pace of where it was, 29% from a year ago. So when you look at it face value right here, right now, under normal circumstances, I would say, yes, that is very, very legit to raise it. But when you have a President Trump who on the whole year has been talking about putting massive trade tariffs on everybody, pretty much 10% more on China, 25% on both Mexico and Canada. You have Canada coming out today talking about putting export taxes on goods coming back across. I think, if you're an end user trying to buy commodities, there was definitely an impetus to go ahead and try to front run the potential of a trade war between your politicians. And, time will tell. We really won't know probably till Jan, Feb, March, really, if these sales are front-loaded and they continue to remain strong all the way into the springtime, or do they back off quick, which then it probably suggests what I fear could be happening. It's all front-loaded. We'll see.
Chuck Shelby, when you think about this, are you of a mind that everything is, or a lot of it has been front-loaded? Corn, relatively speaking, has been awfully good. And this is the time we export soybeans during the fall of the year. And then normally we would begin to ship corn. How do you see it?
I think there's probably been some of the front-running going on, but I believe that we're going to see some agreements made. I don't think these other countries, they haven't had anybody pushing back on them for at least 4 years. So to me, I think they're just kind of posturing. I believe at the end of the day, everybody will want to get along. It's in everybody's benefit to make these agreements. So, I think the corn's a little bit of a different story. I think there is good demand there. You've seen Ukraine production over time with the intensification of the war ongoing is slowly slipping away is all the turmoil going on in that country. So to me, I think we're going to see some deals reached here, and I think we're going to see continued good demand as we move into 25.
And Mike Zuzulo, when you look at this macroeconomically and the policy side, how do you see the next couple of months unfolding?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Chuck, I would agree with him, you know, in terms of President Trump is serious about the tariffs, but he's also serious about using those as a tool to get the other countries to the table. On the supply demand side of the equation, I do think the corn has the best look to it on the report, Todd. We lost a million metric tons on Brazil exports. Made sense that U.S. would pick that up. I think this is the key right now for the corn versus the beans. To me, the beans are still the hole in the leaky bucket, and you can see that with the soybean prices being about $30 a ton over Brazil, whereas corn prices are $20 a ton under Brazil. And I, you know, the only thing else I would add to that, what I looked at on the world supply demand numbers was the total usage, and especially the total usage less China actually jumped 6 million metric tons versus October's numbers back in November. And so it made China look a little bit, you know, less concerning to me a month ago. I think the big issue for corn is Mexico, and I think that's really where it's going to boil down to politically and in terms of really hurting us. The last thing I'll say about front loading sure looks more likely in the soybeans, given that we lost, 518,000 in reductions this morning on the export sales to unknown destinations. I didn't like seeing that.
Yeah. So, Chuck Shelby, I want to stay with corn for just a moment. There were another 150 million extra bushels of exports that USDA added in the last World Ag Supply and Demand Estimate. 50 million more bushels in ethanol grind. Both of those numbers were a bit of a surprise to the trade. Can the pace be maintained for both? And will USDA need to update them in the future if you're thinking that these trade agreements might be put into place?
Well, I think another component of what's going on is the value of the dollar. We've seen that rally quite a bit since the election has passed. So that's another factor that's going to play as we move into 2025. The dollar strength would deter some of our exports, but I think overall it's still a cheap price when you look at $4 corn historically going back with inflation going on. That's still a cheap price, so I still think we're going to be okay going forward. I think there's going to be a different attitude in the country, a different attitude in the world. So I'm optimistic that we can maintain these and continue to see good usage in corn.
Tim McCormick, AgMarket.net, has been an advocate for a good portion of the season, including this week, of continuing to make cash corn sales if and when needed. And this week was one of those times that your company suggested that was needed. Where do you stand? Where do you stand at this point? Because I feel like that we might have a difference of opinion as to whether we should be friendly, neutral, or not as friendly to the marketplace within our panel at this point. But we'll come back to Chuck and Mike and see what they're thinking.
Well, yeah, we sold some. This week, technically, you know, you look what happened on the March contract. We rallied hard into the October, got to 452.25, failed back hard. Kind of consolidate, did it again in November, and then third time here in our 451 hit to 200 days. So we think it's worthwhile doing because we are worried about it. I mean, there's two things to talk about the tariffs, Todd. I think the listeners got to be clear about, okay? There's a rhetoric out there, and the gentleman said, hey, it's a negotiation tactic, okay? And I agree with that. But the one thing I caution my clients is about is, remember, we did a negotiation tactic 6 years ago, and we slapped 22% tariffs on Chinese goods. They're still in place. So those tariffs, which are the negotiation tactics, started, never came off. And actually, Joe Biden increased the tariffs. So any product that has been imported since those tariffs have come in has been a tax on the U.S. consumer bringing that product in. So I think we got to be a little bit cautious thinking, oh, it's just a negotiation tactic that they're going to come back, because history would suggest they're not right away. The other thing we got to worry about on the tariffs is, as President Trump was going through the election cycle, he'd switch back and forth. One day he talked about the tariffs as a tool to get him to come to the negotiation table. He also talked about the tariffs being a revenue situation, Todd, as a way to fund portions of the government. He talks about all the revenue that we've collected, the tax money we've collected. So the question is, as we go into this tariff, does he view this tariff as a negotiation tactic, which he does on some days, or does he view this tariff as a form of revenue, which he's also mentioned multiple times? And if he views it as a revenue source, it's going to be harder for us to deleverage from these trade war tariffs because we're using it to finance XYZ. So we'll see. I think, you know, none of us really know. So when you look at the uncertainty right now, we think it's pragmatic to go ahead and try to market some grain on these rallies. That's pretty much the decision we made for that reason.
Chuck, are you feeling friendlier to the marketplace for corn in particular?
I think it's got the most potential there. As Mike stated, the beans got a big problem with South America crop. And I think you got to look at it. I'm in favor of selling it like Jim's talking about, but I think it's worthy of some re-ownership for some of the potential things that, you know, could make this thing go up. I mean, what if they do sign a deal and agreement with China? And I would think that would be a psychological positive. And then the other factor we're looking at is, our opinion is the yield is good out there, but is it 5 or 6 bushel better than the 2023 record corn crop? So in our opinion, I guess our feeling is, yep, sell the corn for value. There's unknowns out there, but there's also a couple of good things that could happen. If that happens, the funds are already long corn. Generally, the direction they go is up or down is a good place to be. So our opinion is there's some opportunity there, but fairly not ignoring the sales. And the cost of holding, you know, any grain with interest rates where they are is pretty darn high.
Mike, your thoughts as it relates to the corn market and its direction?
Yeah, I mean, the July D's corn spread going to an inversion and building upon that inversion is probably the best indicator in the short term. The idea that I'll probably always default back to is, when you get this kind of a premium in the corn and you see the wheat corn spread at $1 now, a bushel, you're moving the wheat back towards a feed grain. And so it makes me very nervous. And so I go back and default to, what does the copper and what does the crude oil do to help support the wheat in the midst of the expectations that China's going to prop up their consumer demand, maybe as early as Friday or over the weekend, as they have a big meeting, a big economic meeting right now. But if they disappoint the market and the wheat goes down, I don't think soybeans are going to provide corn any support right now. In terms of big picture. And so I could understand why Jim's doing what he's doing.
Yeah, so you're talking about the Chinese economy, and in one hand you're saying, well, they're going to try to support the consumer. But that also means, in the same breath, I believe, that the Chinese may be worried about the health of their economy?
Well, that, and I think going back to dovetailing what Jim was talking about, that, you know, I had said that I think that Trump is also serious about the tariffs. It is both. He is serious about using them as a negotiating tool, but he's also serious about using them. So, you know, I think, all due respect, that was a half statement as far as what Jim talked about. My point is this, and you hit it on the nose. If the Chinese move to support their domestic consumer, that takes pressure off of what Chuck's talking about on the strengthening dollar against the weakening Chinese currency. Right now, China wants a weak currency to export their way out of the markets, and that's why the demand feel is not there in the commodities, in my opinion.
So, Jim, coming back to you just very quickly, when you think about the broader scheme of the two sides that you're discussing as it's related to the tariffs, what is your concern as it relates to the income side, of the tax side, that is an income to the U.S. government, because it does generate income into the government? It also tends to get passed on to consumers. Both can be true at the same time. And how those are managed. And I guess I'm thinking this, Jim. the last set of tariffs, and all the tariffs actually that have been put into place, are targeted. So they were steel. I don't quite recall what the other item that the Trump administration had targeted. And now 100% target on EVs, cars, automobiles coming in from China that the Biden administration had put in place. And still no reaction, by the way, from China at this point. So how do you put all of that back together?
Well, like you said, you can have both ways, because remember, when the tariff comes in, it's getting taxed. The importer is buying that good. He's paying for the tax. If he can't pay, so he's going to pay that premium to get it in. If he can't pass that along, John Deere's producing a tractor down in Mexico. If Trump slaps that tariff on, the cost of that tractor costs 25% more. If John Deere can't pass that 25% cost onto the consumer, he's not going to bring it in. But if he can, he'll pay the 25%. But the 25% doesn't go to Mexico. It goes to the U.S. government. The question is, you've got this big pile of money coming in from the tariffs, and if he puts more on, even more tariffs, does he use that money as a way to offset the tax cuts that were implemented under the Trump administration 6 years ago that are all going to sunset here in 2025? If you do not find a different revenue source, you're going to drive the deficit up even higher. Does he say, hey, look, this is how we're going to pay for these tax cuts to keep them from sunsetting? We're going to use this revenue from the tariffs. I don't know what he's going to do, Todd. I truly don't know what he's going to do. That's my viewpoint is, you know, sell it. I like the gentleman's idea. I would encourage producers to re-own the corn. I mean, South American weather for the beans looks pretty good, but let's face it, the Safrinha corn crop, guys, it's going to be made or broke 6 months from now, and we have no clue how that weather is going to be. The world supply is very, very tight, Todd. If you look at exportable supplies, it is very, very tight. So if something would happen in South America, this corn market could get really, really exciting. But on the other hand, if South America has a normal trendline Safrinha corn crop, and the ratios and what we're seeing here at Ag Market suggests a lot of corn acres, I think 95 plus million acres of corn could easily go into the ground here in the United States, and we follow up with a trendline yield next year, the world will be oversupplied in corn, unfortunately, just like it is in beans at the moment. So that's the reason for kind of our little bit more aggressive approach to get the grain marketed and then use options to play the what if.
Yeah, just for some clarification sake, the president does not have the ability to put a tariff on a company or on a single product. It would have to be on a line of products. In this case, it would be agricultural tractors or I believe it was forklifts, frankly, but it would probably be, you know, construction equipment or something like that. So,
you know, the hard part about this, Todd, is it could be anything. I mean, it changes depending on who he's talking to. You know, but, you know, at one time it was a general 25% tariff on anything crossing the border. But then you've had other people say maybe it's going to be more individual, like you suggested. The fact of the matter is none of us know. We're all kind of guessing what he may do. Then we're guessing how the foreign, you know, China, Mexico, Canada react to what he's doing as well. So, you know, there's just a lot of unknowns, a lot of guesses. But I fully admit, I have no idea what he's going to do. I just know what he's done. Last time around, he did put the tariffs on, and we watched the market react, at least knee-jerk-wise, was very negative. And I think you got to be mentally prepared. That could happen, at least temporarily, until everyone comes to the table.
Chuck Shelby, let's move to another unknown that we understand a little better, I suppose. Let's talk about the January report. U.S. corn consumption was up in the December report, sharply actually, up that 200 million bushels that we talked about, 150 in exports, 50 million in ethanol production. Do you suppose consumption can go back up again in the January reports?
It's a pretty strong number. I think they probably made adjustments there that are probably as far as they're going to go right now. Like say, the part we're looking for is what they're going to do with the yield. It just seems like 5 or 6 bushel above the 2023 record yield is pretty far out there when you consider some of the issues that went on. A lot of the crop at the end got harvested at 12 to 14% moisture. There's an automatic yield reducer there. And when you look at, again, the tar spot issues in some areas, you know, it just seems like talking to producers across the country, there's some guys who did knock it out of the park. But there's a lot of guys who didn't. And so, yeah, I'm not saying the crop's not bigger. It just seems like the amount of yield where they are at is just too big compared to the 23 crop.
Are you saying that you think that the December survey of farmers will show a smaller corn yield?
Yes, that's what we're saying. Again, we're not saying it's not a great crop. It's just, you know, if you want to compare it to the 23 crop, which is 177, and you're going to try to run it up to 182, 183, that just seems like too big of a jump for the guys that we talked to. And again, it's a good crop, but that's a tremendous statistical jump from a record in the previous year.
How much smaller do you think it is in million bushels?
Could be 100 to 150 million less.
Okay.
And again, not huge changes, but again, when you're looking at it, we already dropped it down to 1.7, and if you took a bushel away with the same demand, you're down to 1.6. If demand would happen to continue and we have a deal made with China, or again, the second crop isn't quite as good, you can kind of find a pathway for corn to have some reasons to be a positive outlook going forward. Granted, I would guess we would plant more acres, but that's a long ways away. We'd have to see a rally that gets guys excited about doing that to get that, you know, 95 or 96 million corn acres.
Mike, I suspect you've been penciling in some numbers for the January supply and demand report as well, that final crop production report series, actually, reports to on that day, the grain stocks, too. Which one do you think you want to talk about at the moment?
Well, it's going to be hard to, I think, take the carryover much lower at this point. I think the stocks to use ratios are tight enough. I was surprised by the export increase. I was surprised by the ethanol increase, quite honestly, as Canada is our number one exporter. And so USDA is not looking at all on any kind of trade frictions at all. And so I've always felt comfortable around that 180 area in terms of the corn, with the idea that maybe the acreage base is a little bit higher. So it wouldn't surprise me at all that what Chuck's talking about. I'm a little bit more concerned about the demand side of the equation at this point and meeting those targets. I really think that the feed side with the wheat and just the strength of the U.S. dollar right now, especially going into the election. And I think that's, to me, that's really what it's all about when it comes to what Jim was talking about is the trade's done a very good job through the currency markets telling us what they think's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I do think the currency market's pretty efficient. And so that's really what I'll keep watching is I would love to see the dollar break against the Brazilian and Canadian and Chinese and Russian currencies. And I think that could happen because they've all weakened pretty much against the U.S. dollar. So that'll tell us what's going on with the trade, essentially, in my opinion.
So what has the trade been telling us through the currencies? What have they said?
That we've got tariffs coming, and it's not the full 60%. The Asian Development Bank just came out with a brand new report yesterday, I think it was, and they gamed it out using the mild tariff increases, and that suggested that we would have a pretty okay 2025, but it'd be really hard on agriculture and commodities in 26 and 27.
It will be interesting, Jim McCormick, when we get to the January reports, because the crop production report and the survey that USDA NAS collects will adjust all of those things that they would look at, including the grain stocks report, also by USDA NAS. So we'll have some idea of what usage looks like in the first quarter. However, the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate made by the World Ag Outlook Board, not NAS, does not incorporate any policies which are not in place. So Jim, the point I'm trying to get to is that if there are tariffs to come, they will not be reflected in the WASD in January because that's not how that organization operates. I would think that makes it pretty difficult to use that set of supply and demand tables at least until January 20th and you get a better idea of what a President Trump will do when he's in office. As somebody who's talking to producers all the time, have to consider that and try to walk them through what those January reports look like. How do you do that?
Well, it's like I said, it's going to be tough. I mean, you know, we're going to encourage people, like I said, you know, when it's profitable, lay off risk. We're trying to market. Well, probably as we get into that January report or very close to it, we'll be looking at short dated options, a way to mitigate risk depending on how they're looking. You know, if they've got a lot of unpriced grain, maybe look at the weekly options, some type of situation. But January's going to be interesting. That January report, Todd, traditionally has been one of the more volatile reports. So that report comes out on a Friday. We trade a week. We have a three-day weekend. The markets, interesting enough, will be closed on Martin Luther King Day when Trump actually gets signed, when Trump actually is inaugurated. And he says he's going to do this all on the first day. So technically that would happen in the afternoon while the markets are closed. So then when we open back up that Monday night for Martin Luther King, after the Martin Luther King holiday, you're potentially setting yourself up for a lot of volatility. Because like I said, there's a lot of uncertainty. And I don't know if we're really going to know what Trump is going to do until he actually does it. He just has that history of changing his mind. So how do you mitigate it? You use options as a way to mitigate your risk. The higher we go up into the report, if we would happen to get a rally for whatever reason, the more intense I'm going to encourage people to lay off the risk.
Chuck Shelby, anything else on corn that you want to make sure we talk about today?
I think it's going to be, it's the most interesting market I think we've got of all the three, corn, beans, and wheat, as we, approach the 25 growing season. So it's kind of the shining star, or it's the leader, I guess, at this point, and it's going to impact what the other commodities do, I think.
Now let's turn our attention to 2025. I think I want to start with soybeans, maybe. Mike Suslow, this will be interesting because we've got all kinds of time. Soybeans are really, there's just a lot of supply on the planet. However, there may be a lot more corn acres in the United States because of the way we have the trade at the moment. What are you considering?
This is where one of the colleagues I work with in South America and another one in Chicago are really beating the drum at this point after the WASD report, and that I thought a surprise increase for Argentina's bean crop, given that they are just now getting into the planting or post-planting time period, and it's early days yet. But the Chicago colleague I talked to would not be surprised at all to see $8.50 to $9 November 2025 soybeans. And that really does put you in a world of hurt, both in terms of upward trajectory of D's 25 corn and, profitability and profit per acre on soybeans. And the South American colleague supports the idea of this massive Chancay port in Peru coming online, and the Chinese and the Brazilians and the Paraguayans and the Chinese working very hard to build rail and build infrastructure and highway to get, beans out of Brazil and even wheat out of Argentina at this point, out of that mega port. And so we're at a pretty tough spot because for me, I don't want to look back in March and say, why didn't I sell those $10 beans? I'm already saying, why didn't I sell more of the $11 beans for clients? So that's probably first and foremost between now and inauguration, more important to me than what we've been talking about at this point.
So you're both old and new crop sales for soybeans.
Yeah, I've still got a 30% number left for old crop beans for a lottery ticket weather market, but that's also giving me the ability, if I think I need to press harder on the new crop sales.
And Chuck, where do you land on soybeans today?
Pretty much a challenging market. We got to look at moving them. You have a major supplier that's South America that looks pretty good at this point. And so beans are just going to struggle here. If we do cut acres back on beans next spring, that could be a positive. If you have 95 or 97 million corn acres, you're going to cut bean acres way back. So that changes the balance sheet, but we don't know that. And going forward again, the downside is probably more significant than it is for corn on the new crop beans as we get into the growing season. So some kind of strategy to take advantage of it is makes sense. And the cost of holding beans again with the interest rates or prepaying expenses, it just makes that even an easier decision to move in, and you can go to paper if you want some kind of re-ownership strategy. But beans have got problems with oversupply as we move into the 25 growing season.
And Jim McCormick, your thoughts on soybean?
I think they're in trouble. I agree. I mean, fundamentally, I think if Brazil's crop, unless it tails off hard or Argentina tails off hard, I think the reality is we probably should go to $9 beans. And I think that's going to drag the new crop beans down as well. We've been pretty aggressive getting everything sold here, because we're fearful of it. And then, I think, unfortunately, we're going to be, like I said, I think we're going to get a lot of corn acres. I think 75 million, or 95 million is probably the working number I've got right now. And I think it could go even higher, Todd, if the beans go down. It's just how much money can the farmer be willing to put into this corn crop that may limit the amount of acres. So, the way I see it, without a weather problem right now, I just don't know there's enough demand to get us out of this oversupply we currently have at the moment.
One last topic, and I think we can be short on this, and then I'll get a final word from each of you. So, Chuck, there is a lot of strife across the planet. We still have a war between Russia and Ukraine. The Middle East just seems like it continues to get broader in the war footing. Do either of these play in the commodity markets in the near term?
I think it's absolutely part of the decline in commodity prices, because when you have these two major conflicts, you're spending money on weapons. You're not doing your normal it's just a huge problem. And you look at countries like Ukraine that were a very productive country as far as exporting and importing things. You look at the Middle East, the tensions, the problems there with two conflicts. So, yeah, to me, it's one of the major setbacks in our world and commodities. If we could solve those two, I believe that's another positive that going forward would help stabilize prices and help us work for higher grain prices over time.
Yeah, the difference at this point is that the beginning of the Ukraine-Russia war took supply off the marketplace. Now that's been rerouted in some form across the planet. And the Middle East, while there is some production there, isn't a big player other than on the consumption side, I suppose. Is that right?
Yeah, and again, it's just, you can see how it's disrupted things where, China's buddied up to Russia. And just again, I think it would be a major positive if we go forward and resolve at least one or maybe both of these over time. It's simply so negative to the overall attitude of the world and causes so much trade disruption and spending money again on things that aren't really productive. It's just overall, I think it's been a long, a couple of years with these two wars going on. And I think there's, again, going forward, hopefully we're going to get these things solved. And I think that's a positive.
Now let's get a final thought from each of you. Jim McCormick at agmarket.net. We'll start with you today. Your final thoughts?
Oh, well, as we wrap up the holiday or the trading year, there's going to be opportunities, Todd, I believe. But I think producers, as I mentioned, I think there's a lot of uncertainty going on in the world right now. We've got our new administration that there's a lot of uncertainty to the policies that could get enacted and how they may affect our markets. So we're going to encourage people to take a more of a defensive approach. You can always re-own it with options, but like any rallies that you can essentially book profits, go ahead and don't be afraid to take advantage of it.
Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Your final word?
As we move into 25, hopefully we'll get a new farm bill going and get some of this uncertainty again off the table, as we've talked about during the meeting today or discussion. So I'm looking forward to 25. I think, again, there'll be some opportunities, but it's going to be challenging and as we move into the new year.
And Mike Zuzulo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas.
We talk a lot about the wheat and the copper and the crude oil, Todd, when we speak. And this week's inflation numbers in the United States versus China really show up why the trade has this, epicenter of negative demand perception is in the crude oil. Our PPI is plus 3%, producer prices. China's is negative 2.5%. So that's really the heart of, I think, where this negative demand mindset sits, regardless of these strong ag exports.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Jim McCormick, Chuck Shelby, and Mike Zuzlow. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.